his arm jarring as his blade met flesh, drawing a stifled shout of pain and brief rainfall spatter of blood on the floor tiles. His attacker wore cotton garments of black, a mask over his face, soot smeared on the brows and eyelids. His eyes glared up at Valen from the floor as he clutched at the deep gash in his thigh, not in anger, but shocked surprise. Valen killed him with a slash to the neck, left him writhing in a welter of arterial blood as he ran on. The fire in his chest now an inferno of pain, his vision blurring, losing focus, fixing on the Aspect's door no more than a few feet away now. He stumbled, colliding with the wall, pushing himself onwards with an angry grunt of self-reproach.
Save her!
Two more blades shimmered out of the darkness, another black-clad figure, a short sword in each hand, attacking in a frenzy of slashing blades. Valen parried the first two slashes, moved back to let the others whistle within an inch of his face, stepped inside the reach of the man's kick, and killed him with a thrust to the sternum, guiding his sword blade up under the ribs, finding the heart. The black-clad man went into a brief spasm, blood gouting from his mouth, then sagged, doll-like, devoid of life, hanging on Valen's blade like a rag. The weight of it dragged him down, sword buried in the body up to the hilt, blood covering his arm in a thick, red slick, bathing the floor. The smell would have made him gag but for the toxin raging in his blood. Tired. He slumped against the corpse, a weight of exhaustion greater than any he had known pressing down on him. The pain in his chest receding, displaced by this overwhelming need for sleep. So tired. You don't look well, brother. The voice was anonymous, without source or owner, lost amidst the shadows. A dream? He wondered. A dream before death? She found you, I see, the voice went on. There was the faintest scrape of a blade tip on stone. No dream. Valen gritted his teeth, grip tightening on his sword hilt. She's dead! He shouted into the dark. I'm sure. The voice was mild, devoid of accent or recognition. Neither cultured nor coarse. Pity. I always liked her in that guise. She was so wonderfully cruel. Did you bed her first? I think she would have liked that. It was only a slight note of tension in the tone, but Valen sensed the owner of the unseen voice was about to make his move. Shaking with the effort, he got off his knees, standing, pulling his sword free of the corpse. Waited too long, he realized. Should have killed me when I was vulnerable. Is he waiting for the poison to complete the task for him? You're afraid, Valen grunted into the darkness. You know you can't beat me. Silence. Silence and shadows, broken only by the drip of blood from his sword ticking on the floor. No time, he thought, his vision swimming, a dreadful, icy numbness creeping into his limbs. No time to wait. Once, he said, his voice a dry rasp, making him cry it out. Once there were seven. There was a clatter of locks and latches, followed by the creak of hinges as the Aspect's door opened behind him, and her comely, faintly annoyed face appeared shrouded by candlelight. What is all this noise? The knife came spinning out of the dark, end over end, a precise throw, its tip certain to take the Aspect in the eye. Valen's sword arm felt like lead, as he brought his blade round in an arc, the blade meeting the knife, sending it spinning into the shadows. He never saw the assassin follow up his attack. He felt it, knew it, but he never saw it. His counter was automatic, unconscious, immediate. He spun, both hands on his sword hilt, the last vestiges of his strength in the blow. He never felt it meet the man's neck. Heard rather than saw the geyser of blood painting the ceiling and walls as the headless corpse continued for a few steps before collapsing. All he knew was the inescapable, dominating need to sleep. The floor tiles were cool against his cheek, his chest moving in a sedate rhythm. He wondered if he would dream of wolves. Valen! Strong hands gripped him, shook him, many feet thundered on the floor. A babble of voices like a raging river. He groaned in annoyance. Valen, wake up! Something hard smacked across his face, making him wince. Wake up! Don't sleep, do you hear me? More voices, tumbling together in a barely decipherable clamor. Fetch Sister Sherin, now. Get him to the teaching room. Forget them. They're dead. What was he infected with? Looks like a knife wound. Where's the blade?
She wanted to apologize, Valen said, deciding he should be helpful.
Came to my room. Would have got me but for the wolf. Check his room.
Sherin's voice, more shrill and panicked than he knew it could be. Look for a knife. Make sure you don't touch the blade.
There were more voices. A vague sensation of being carried, the coolness of the floor replaced by the hard smoothness of a treatment table. Valen groaned, his befuddled mind perceiving the pain to come.
Dead? The Aspect's voice. What do you mean, dead?
Looks like poison.
Master Harin's deep rumble responded. A pellet hidden in one of her teeth. Haven't seen the like for a long time.
Valen decided to open his eyes, seeing only a murky collage of shadows. He blinked, his vision clearing long enough to make out Sister Sherin. Nostrils flared as she sniffed Sister Henna's knife.
Hunter's arrow, she said. We need Joffril root.
That could kill him.
Valen knew he should have been shocked by the alarm in the Aspect's voice, but found his mind filled with the question he had to ask.
He'll die if we don't, Sherin snapped, her face stricken, fearful but determined. He's young and strong, he can stand it.
A pause, a sigh of deep frustration.
Fetch the root, and plenty of red flower.
No, Sherin cut in.
No, it diminishes the effect, no red flower.
Faith, sister.
Master Harin's hulking form moved into Valen's view for the first time.
Do you know what that stuff does to a man?
She's right, the Aspect said, her voice tight.
Aspect? Valen said.
She moved to him, her hand clasping his, fingers smoothing his brow.
Valen, please lie still. We have to give you a physic to make you well. This will hurt. You must be strong.
Aspect?
He fought to keep his vision stable, locked on her eyes.
Please. What was my mother's name?
Vardrian. It sang in his mind through a tumult of pain.
Vardrian.
Her name. Her family name. Sweat bathed him. His chest was a furnace. Darkness clouded his eyes. But her name held him. An anchor in the world. Sister Sherin had tied a leather strap around his arm and injected the tincture of Joffril root directly into his vein with a long needle. The agony was almost instantaneous. The room fractured and disappeared, the Aspect's soothing words fading away, Sherin's stricken face a pale smudge in the descending shadow.
Vardrian.
It was a curious effect of pain, that time became infinite. Every instant of agony prolonged to the ultimate. He knew that his back was arched, his spine tensed like a bow, strong hands holding him to the table as he raved and raged incoherently. He knew it, but he didn't feel it. It was far away, somewhere beyond the pain. Ildera Vardrian. His mother. A plain name. A name without nobility or notoriety. A name that came from the fields or the streets. She was like his father, elevated by her talent. She was special. Suddenly he could see her face so clearly, the darkness fleeing before the brightness of her smile, the compassion in her eyes. She was a beacon in the pain, a focus for his will to live. He never knew how long it lasted, how long it took him to exhaust himself. They told him later he injured several of the Fifth Order's stronger brothers, that he even tried to bite the Aspect, that he screamed the most foul and terrible things, but he had no knowledge of it. All he knew was the name. Ildera Vardrian. It saved him. Chapter 5. In his dream there was no pain. In his dream, soft golden light streamed through the window, and Sister Sherin's smile was radiant as she gazed down at him.
You lived, she said. I knew you would.
A dream. A dream allows you to speak your heart.
You're beautiful, he told her. A smile became a laugh. You're delirious, brother. Try to sleep. You need to rest. There are a number of dangerous-looking young men outside who will be very angry with me if you don't recover. We should go away together, he went on blithely, rejoicing in the freedom of the dream. We should escape. Find a quiet part of the world where you can heal, and I can learn to be something other than a killer.
Shh.
Her fingers were on his lips, her smile gone now. Please, Valen. I felt nothing when I killed those men. Nothing. That isn't right. You saved the aspect. You had no choice. The man in black clutched at the wound in his leg. When Valen's sword cut into his neck, a faint, childlike whimper escaped his throat. I have shamed my mother. Compared to her, I am nothing. No. A hand caressed his brow. Her face came close to his, and a soft kiss played on his lips. You're a guardian, a warrior who fights in defense of the helpless. You are strong and you are just. Always remember that. And always remember that I will be here whenever you need me. Whenever you call for me. My skills are yours. The dream began to fade, exhaustion dragging him to oblivion. I'd rather we just went away together. He woke to pain. Not the agony of the Joffrel root, but the mingled ache of strained muscles and dehydration. Oddly shaped red-brown stains discolored his bedsheets, and the cut on his arm retained the sting of poison. His eyelids had begun to droop, the welcoming arms of his dream beckoning, when he noticed he was not alone. Master Solis sat in the corner of the room, arms folded, his sword resting on his knees. The redness of his eyes told of a sleepless night. "Took you long enough to wake up," he said. "Sorry, Master," Valen croaked. Master Solis rose and went to the table beside the bed to pour a cup of water from a large clay jug. "Here." He held the cup to Valen's lips. "Small sips. Don't gulp it." The water tasted better than water had ever tasted, flooding his mouth, banishing the dryness of his throat. "Thank you, Master. Sister Sharon said you should drink at least a cup every hour. She gave very strict instructions for your care." "Sharon, we should go away together." A new pain tugged at his chest, and he found himself wishing he had never had the dream. Waking to find that it hadn't been real was almost more than he could bear. He looked down at the stains on his sheets. Did they have to cut me open? He had a vividly unpleasant image of the rib spreader being plunged into his chest. "Apparently Joffrel root causes a man to sweat blood. Part of its useful purgative effect, so I'm told." Solis pulled his chair from the corner of the room and sat down next to the bed. "I need to know what happened here." So Valen told him, omitting nothing. Solis listened in silence, barely raising an eyebrow at Sister Henna's visit to his room, and remaining impassive when Valen mentioned the wolf's howl that had saved him. His only reaction came at the mention of her words, "Once there were seven." It was only a slight shift in the eyes, but it said much. "He knows," Valen decided. "He knows what it means, and I'd bet a sack of gold he isn't going to tell me." Solis showed no reaction to the rest of it, asking only a few questions. "And how would you assess their skills, these assassins?" "They could swing a blade, but seemed to know nothing of tactics. I was poisoned, weak. They should have killed me, taking me in a rush. Instead, they came at me in turn, each time from ambush." Master Solis sat in silence, pondering the information. Valen felt a desperate need to sleep, but forced himself to remain alert. Novice brothers did not sleep in a master's presence. "Is Sister Sharon coming back?" Valen asked, hoping a break in the silence would keep him awake. I'd like to know how long I'll be laid up in this bed. She's tending the wounded. She's likely to be busy for a while. The last 2 days have seen much trouble in the city." 2 days? He had been dreaming and sweating blood for 2 days. "Trouble, Master. There have been riots. When word spread of the attacks, rumors started about a denier plot, Soon it was common knowledge a hidden army of Cumberlands was waiting in the sewers to murder us all in our beds. He shook his head in disgust. Ignorant people will believe anything if they're scared enough. Velen was puzzled. Attacks. Alara Almenda was not the only Aspect to be attacked. The Aspects of the Fourth and Second Orders are dead. The others were lucky to survive. Aspect Hendral was sorely wounded. Seems the knife wasn't long enough to reach his heart through the blubber. Balin's mind reeled. Two Aspects slain? It seemed so utterly incredible. He remembered Aspect Corlin Alcentis well from his test of knowledge. The solemn, grave-faced man who had pressed him on the events in the forest. It was strange to think of him torn by daggers and poison. His chain of thought led him to an inevitable concern. Aspect Arlin? He is alive and well. They sent three men for him. They tunneled into the vaults, where they were met by Master Grelin. It's always a mistake to underestimate a fat man in a fight. It was the closest thing to a compliment Solis had ever voiced about Master Grelin. Is he injured? A few bruises only. Although he was sorely grieved, he couldn't keep one of them alive to provide some answers. My brothers? They're all well. Brother Nortar managed to get himself expelled from the Second Order after only 2 days. As for the others, Brother Canis distinguished himself by killing the assassin who had knifed Aspect Hendral, and the others appear to have been sleeping off a vat full of ale when Aspect Corlin met his end. Half the novice brothers of the Sixth Order lolling about the house of the Fourth Order, and assassins slit the Aspect's throat and get away before anyone had noticed. Severe punishment was warranted. Velen sank back into his mattress, suddenly overwhelmed by tiredness. "Forgive me, Master," he said, "for not taking one of them alive." The poison dulled my wits somewhat. He drifted away, seeing Master Solis's lean, inexpressive face fade into shadow. Barkus raged, Dentos joked, Norta laughed, and Canis said little. Velen realized he had missed them all terribly. "It's just so bloody daft," Barkus said, bafflement creasing his brows. "I mean, what is going on?" "Clearly there are enemies among us, brother," Canis said. "We must be wary."
"But why, though? Why kill the Aspects?"
Velen was tired. The cut on his arm had darkened into a bluish scar, and the agony instilled by the Joffrel root had faded into a dull ache that lingered in his limbs. Throughout the morning, he had had several visitors, Master Herin awkwardly complimenting him and forcing a booming laugh or two. Velen could tell the big man was gratified by his survival and saddened by Henna's betrayal. She had been something of a favorite in his group. Brother Selin stayed for over an hour, gnarled hands clutching his wooden club, and talking of how he would have used it on the assassins if he'd but had the chance. Velen had a brief vision of an elderly brother lying in the gatehouse, with his throat cut, but said, "They were wise indeed to give you a wide berth, brother." The old man seemed happy enough with this, and said he would come back the next day with a healing broth of his own recipe. There had been other visitors, but Sister Sharon had been conspicuous by her absence, and he worried about any embarrassing ramblings he may have uttered in his sleep. "How's Frentis?" he said. "Angry," Norta said. "Doesn't know what to do with it. We've had to drag him out of 3 fights already. He begged the Aspect to let him come with us, but got a day in the stables for his pains. Keep an eye on him when you get back. I don't like his being around Master Renciel on his own. Tell him I'm well. I'll be back soon. And tell him to make sure he visits Scratch every day." Norta nodded. It was unspoken but acknowledged that he would lead whilst Velen recovered. "They said you killed 4 of them," he said. "Impressive."
"3.
There was a girl. She had pretended to be a sister here for years. She killed herself when she failed to kill me."
"A girl?"
A faintly wicked smile played on Norta's lips as he glanced at the scar on Valen's arm. "How close did you let her get, brother?"
"Too close.
A lesson I won't forget." "Brother Nilin had been at the Fourth Order for over 12 years, Canis said. "He was one of the most respected scholars, author of 3 books on linguistics, teacher of languages to the novice brothers, and all the time he was waiting to kill Aspect Dendril."
"Fat bastard's got you to thank he's still with us," Norta said.
"How did you reckon it out anyway?" I didn't. I was returning a book the Aspect had lent me. I kicked the door in when I heard him screaming. He paused, his somber mood deepening visibly. Brother Nilin put up a fair fight for a man in his 47th year. And what did you do with him? Dentos asked. I didn't have a weapon. Couldn't see the point of carrying one around the Fourth Order. I had to use my hands.
Couldn't have been easy, Barkers commented, facing off unarmed against a man with a knife.
The man was skilled, but...
Canis shrugged. He wasn't one of us, Velen finished.
Canis nodded. Which begs the question, why wait until the orders are full of boys from the Sixth Order before making their move?
Nothing about this makes sense, Norta said, yawning. Although I can understand someone wanting the Aspect of the Second Order dead. One more minute of the boring old fool's twaddle, and I'd have strangled him myself.
Is that why you were expelled? Velen asked.
Dento snickered, and Norta's smile for once seemed to have some genuine humor in it.
There was a misunderstanding with one of the sisters. Apparently relaxation massage has certain limitations. At least I think that's what she said before she slapped me and ran off.
Velen let them laugh for a few seconds before cutting in, raising his gaze to meet each of their eyes in turn.
I don't know what happened here, brothers. I don't understand it any better than you do. I do know that we live in perilous times, that the only trust we can have is in each other. Heed Master Solis, obey the Aspect, and above all, guard each other well.
The door opened, and Sister Sharon entered with a bowl of steaming water, the first time he had seen her all day.
Out, she commanded.
Time for Brother Valin's wash, and you lot have been here long enough.
A wash, eh? Norta raised an eyebrow, leaning close to Sharon as she placed the bowl on the table, barely noting how his gaze scanned her from head to toe.
I trust you'll be very thorough, sister.
Sharon gave Norta the same wearied, uninterested glance he recognized from her encounters with amorous drunks in the treatment room.
Don't you have to go and play with your sword somewhere, brother?
Laughing wryly, Norta followed the others from the room.
Your friend could do with a lesson in manners, Sharon observed, placing the bowl on the small table beside the bed. His demeanor is unseemly for a brother.
My order has many different brothers within its ranks, some of them more seemly than others.
She raised an eyebrow but said nothing, dipping her cloth into the bowl and making to pull back the covers.
I'm strong enough now to wash myself, sister, he told her, gently but firmly holding onto the blankets. She gave him a bemused look.
Trust me when I say, brother, you have nothing I haven't seen before. Who do you think washed you when you were unconscious?
Velen drove the uncomfortable thought to the back of his mind, and kept hold of the bedclothes.
Even so, I'm stronger now.
As you wish.
She dropped the cloth into the bowl and moved back.
Since you're so much stronger, you can meet with the Aspect today. She's been asking for you. In the gardens at noon. I'll help you if you can stand to accept my help, that is.
She left the room without a backward glance. It took Velen a moment to realize he'd actually hurt her feelings.
The gardens of the Fifth Order were extensive, covering several acres of rich soil, where brothers and sisters tended the myriad variety of herbs and medicinal plants that played such an important role in their work. For the most part, the gardens consisted of a series of rectangles, a monotonous checkerboard of green and brown. But here and there were islands of color, clusters of flowers and cherry blossoms.
We have gardens in our order, Velen told Sharon, as she helped him along one of the gravel pathways between the allotments.
His legs and chest still ached a good deal, and he leaned on her shoulder more heavily than he would have wished, knowing the proximity made her uncomfortable. She had said nothing when she arrived at noon, to take him to the Aspect, and did her best to avoid his gaze.
They aren't like this, he went on when she didn't respond.
Master Smentil tends them, mostly on his own. He only speaks in signs, lost his tongue to the Lonak. His voice faded. Sister Sharon was clearly in no mood for conversation. She halted at a small series of flower beds. He could see the slender figure of Aspect Alera moving between the blossoms.
The Aspect will help you on the way back, Sharon said, moving away to let his arm fall from her shoulder.
Thank you, sister. She nodded and turned away.
Sister, he said, reaching out to touch her wrist.
A moment, please. She pulled her wrist away, avoiding his touch, but lingered, eyes guarded.
I didn't thank you, he said, for saving my life. It is my role, brother. When I was undergoing my cure, I had many strange dreams. I think I may have said things, things I would never say. If I said anything offensive...
You said nothing, brother. She raised her gaze, meeting his, forcing a small smile.
Nothing offensive, at least.
She folded her arms tightly across her chest, her smile fading.
You'll be leaving soon, going back to that awful place, going to fight some dreadful war. We won't talk again. Perhaps not ever.
Involuntarily, he moved closer, reaching out to grasp her hands.
We'll talk again. I promise.
Balin. It was Aspect Alera, standing at the edge of the flower garden, a small pruning knife in her hand. Her smile was bright.
You're so much stronger.
Thanks to Sister Sharon's care, Aspect.
Indeed.
Her care is valuable, as is her time.
Forgive me, Aspect. Sharon bowed her head. I shouldn't loiter.
There is no rebuke, sister, but the city is still troubled. I fear your skills will be sorely needed again today.
Sharon nodded, gave Velin a parting glance, a sad smile on her lips, before releasing his hands and making her way back to the order house.
Velin watched her until she was out of sight.
What do you know of flowers, Velin?
Alera Almenda asked him, offering her arm for support and leading him into the flower garden.
Master Hutchell taught me to spot the poisonous ones.
He said they're good for grinding up and smearing on arrowheads. And I have a sister who likes winter blooms.
Very useful, I'm sure. Do you know what these are?
She stopped beside a short row of purple flowers with odd, curved heads framed by four long petals.
I haven't seen them before, Aspect.
Marlian orchids, from the far south of the Alpirian Empire.
Actually, they're crossbreeds. I mixed in some of our native orchids to add a little hardiness. Our climate is colder than they're used to.
It's often the way with plants. Take them out of the soil in which they've grown, and they wither and die. He felt a lesson was being taught, a lesson he didn't want to hear.
I understand, Aspect.
He assumed it was the response she expected.
Sharon is special, the Aspect went on. She cares, you see. Cares more than most, even the brothers and sisters of this order. Perhaps that's where her skill comes from. And she is very skilled. Already she surpasses me in most things.
But don't tell her that.
Skill like that is bound to make her isolated. There aren't many who take the time or trouble to know her well enough to see how special she is.
But you did. As I knew you would.
It's why I placed you together. But I didn't expect your bond to be so strong.
I believe friendship is not forbidden those who serve the faith.
Aspect Alera raised an eyebrow at the impertinence, but voiced no rebuke.
Friendship is always to be valued, but it cannot inhibit the role you and Sharon are to play. Sharon is to this order what you are to yours.
And what is that?
The future. It is necessary you both understand this. Your mother did not, or she refused to.
Love can do that. Blind you to the path the faith has made for you.
When she left this place to marry your father, the Fifth Order lost a future aspect.
I'm sure my mother knew her own heart.
She winced a little, hearing his bitterness.
Yes, she did. I meant no criticism, merely regret.
She was my closest friend. When I first came here, she taught me. Without her, I would know nothing. She paused at a small plain wooden bench and bade him sit. He was grateful for the rest. His legs felt as if they would fold under him at any moment.
May I ask, Aspect? Have you learned anything of the men who attacked you?
She shook her head.
Very little. The bodies were examined. Nothing of interest was found, save that they all had poisoned pellets concealed in their teeth, like Sister Henna. Their faces were not known to anyone. The Realm Guard and the Fourth Order are investigating. I dare say they will provide answers in due course. For a woman who had recently escaped death, she seemed remarkably unconcerned about the identity of her attackers.
You're not afraid others might try again?
She frowned as if the thought had not occurred to her before.
If they come, they come. There seems little I can do about it. The faith tells us to accept those things we cannot change. Sister Henna had been here a long time. Her betrayal must hurt. Betrayal? I doubt she ever had any loyalty to this place, so how could she betray it? She did what she was sent here to do. I must say I'm impressed with her dedication. All this time living a lie, and she never faltered. Never let her mask slip. She said something before she died. Once there were seven. Do you know what it means? There was something there. Some reaction, but not the same recognition he had seen in Master Solis. More like fear, but gone in an instant. You have many questions today, Valen. It seems to be a recurring feature of our conversations. Another one who'll tell me nothing. Forgive me, Aspect. She dismissed his concern with a laugh. After what you did for me, I feel I owe you one answer at least. So ask me. But one question only, mind. One question only. It almost seemed cruel, as if she was playing with him. He wanted answers to every one of the myriad questions that plagued him, but after a moment's frantic thought, he settled on the one that had been at the forefront of his mind for months. What do you know of my sister? Ah. She paused for a moment, sadness lining her face. I know that she's a very bright little girl. I know her parents love her very much. I know that she was born a little over 10 years ago, when my mother was still alive. The Aspect sighed heavily. Valen, I don't wish to hurt you, but you must understand that not every marriage is a happy story. Your mother and father loved each other greatly, but they're also very different. Your mother hated war. She had seen enough of it in her service, but she accepted your father's role as battle lord because she loved him, and because he was a man of justice who strove to keep the worst excesses of the Realm Guard in check. But when the Third Meldinian War came, she found she could stomach it no longer. She knew what he had been ordered to do, and she begged him not to. But he had to obey his king. The city. Men, women, children. Screaming in the flames. Yes. It haunted them both, and it ended their union. She turned away from him. He began spending more time away from home. How he met the woman who would give him a daughter, I don't know. But when your mother died, and you were placed in the Sixth Order, they were brought to live in his home. He asked for permission to marry and legitimize the girl, but the king refused. The Battle Lord must be an example, a model for the people to follow. It was not long after this that your father left the king's service. Did my mother know about the girl? I don't think so. Her health began to fail about the same time. She concerned herself with your future. She reached up to smooth the hair from his forehead. She had many hopes for you, all the good she did, all the people she healed. But you were the proudest achievement of her life. Then I'm glad she did not live to see what I have become. The slap was slow by his standards, but so unexpected he failed to block it. Don't ever say that. Her voice was heavy with anger as he rubbed his stinging cheek. What have you become? A brave young man who saved my life. Not to mention Sister Sharon's. I know your mother's spirit sings with pride at who you are. I am a killer. It's all I know how to do. You are a warrior in the service of the faith. Do not forget that. It may mean nothing to you now, but it will in time. It's not what she wanted. Putting me in that place so my father could move his whore into her house. It wasn't his decision. Another king's order, then. A symbol of his devotion. It was your mother's dying wish. He felt he had been slapped again, only worse. His head spun, mind reeling. Lies! She's lying! My mother would never have wanted this! Valen. He rose from the bench, staggering away from her, nausea and confusion boiling inside him. But his weakened legs could only carry him a few steps before he collapsed, crushing precious orchids and finding himself blinded by tears. Valen. She was holding him, cradling him as he sobbed. I'm sorry. You had to know. Why? He whispered into her breast. Why would she do that? Because she was brave enough to look into your heart and see the man you were meant to be. She prayed to the departed you would inherit her gift, that you would spend your life as a healer. But as you grew, she knew it was your father's skill that ran in your blood. As your father's son, you would have had a very different life. A life of service, true, but service to the king, not the faith. The king had plans for you. Did you know that? In time, you would have been very useful to him. Your mother had lost her husband to his plans. She wouldn't lose a son. As her health worsened, she realized she would not be there to protect you, and your father would always obey his king. She knew Aspect Arlin well from her time in the Cumbrelian Wars, and asked him to take you. Of course he agreed, although he knew it meant conflict with the crown. Your father raged when she told him. His anger was terrible. But your mother was dying, and as his final service to her, she made him promise he would give you to the Order when she was gone. It was his last act of loyalty to her. Loyalty is our strength. Loyalty to a king. Loyalty to a betrayed wife. His voice came in a whisper, secrets rising from deep inside. I heard her once, my first night in the Order as I lay shivering in fear. I heard her say my name. Her arms tightened around him. She loved you so much. When I placed you in her arms, she seemed to shine with it. He drew back a little, puzzled. She smiled and placed a kiss on his forehead. I delivered you, Valin Alsorna, and a big, squalling mass of flesh you were. Questions. Still so many questions. But somehow he felt content to leave them unasked. For now the answers she gave were enough. She held him for a while longer as his tears subsided, then helped him back to the order house. He left 2 days later amidst fond farewells from the brothers and sisters of the Fifth Order. Sister Sharon wasn't present, her aspect having sent her to the southern coast the previous day, where fresh rioting left many people in need of healing. It would be nearly 5 more years before Valin saw her again. Chapter 6. He recovered in a few days, with no lingering ailments save a tendency to cough on cold mornings and a lifelong suspicion of overly amorous women, something that did not concern a brother of the Sixth Order with any regularity. His return to the Order was greeted with studied indifference from the Masters, a marked contrast to the joyous farewells he received from the brothers and sisters of the Fifth Order. His brothers, of course, acted differently, fussing over him with an embarrassing level of concern, confining him to bed for a full week, and forcing food down his throat at every opportunity. Even Norta joined in, although Valin detected a certain sadism in the way he tucked the blankets in and held the soup spoon to his mouth. Frentis was the worst, spending every spare minute in their tower room, anxiously watching over him and becoming agitated at the slightest cough or sign of ill health. He earned his first caning from Master Solis for failing to appear at sword practice because he had been fretting over a slight fever Valin developed in the night. Finally, the aspect decreed their room off-limits to him, on pain of expulsion. When Valin was strong enough to leave his bed without assistance, his first call was to the kennels, where Scratch's greeting was aggressively ecstatic, knocking him off his feet and painting his face with his stone-rough tongue as his rapidly growing brood of pups milled around them, yelping with excitement. "Get off, you brute!" Valin grunted, managing to heave the dog's weight from his chest. Scratch whined a little at the reproach, but laid his head affectionately on Valin's chest. "I know," Valin scratched his ears. "I missed you too." When he visited the stables, he found Spit also had a welcome waiting. It lasted a full 2 minutes, and Master Renciel stated confidently it was the longest fart he had ever heard a horse produce. "Bloody nag," Valin muttered, holding a carrot up to the stallion's mouth. "Test of the horse soon. Don't let me down, eh?" He found Canis at archery practice, loosing as many arrows as possible in the shortest time, a skill crucial to the test of a bow. To Valin's eyes, Canis hardly needed the practice, his hand seeming to blur as he sent shaft after shaft into the butt, 30 paces away. Valin had steadily improved with the bow, but he knew he could never match the level of skill Canis displayed with the weapon, and even he was outshone by Dantos and Norta. "You're a few points off," he observed, although in truth the inaccuracy was barely noticeable. The last few drifted to the left.
Yes, Canis agreed. My aim wanders after 40 arrows or so. He drew the bowstring back, the finely honed muscles of his arm straining before he sent the shaft into the center of the target.
A little better. I wanted to ask you about the assassin you killed.
Canis's expression clouded. I've told the tale many times over, to you, the others, and the masters.
As I'm sure you've told your story many times.
Did he say anything? Velen pressed. Before you killed him?
Yes, he said, get away from me, boy, or I'll gut you.
Hardly worthy of a song, is it? I was wondering if I should change it when I write the tale.
You intend to write of this?
Of course.
One day I will write the story of our service in the faith. I feel our order has been sadly remiss in recording its history. Do you know we're the only order not to have its own library?
I hope to start a new tradition.
He loosed another arrow, then two more in quick succession. Velen noted his aim had worsened.
Killing a man is not an easy thing to bear, or talk about, he realized.
You liked him, this brother Nilin?
He was an interesting man with many stories, although when I thought about it later, I realized he had a fondness for the more ancient tales, the old songs they called, from the time before the faith was strong, sagas of blood and war and the practice of the dark.
The dark. A wolf in the forest. A wolf howling outside my window.
Once there were 7. Do you know what it means?
Canis had drawn his bow once again, but slowly relaxed the tension.
Where did you hear that?
Sister Henna said it before she took poison.
What does it mean, brother?
I know you know.
Canis took the arrow from the bow and returned it to the quiver at his hip, laying the bow down gently on his pack.
It's a story. A tale like the old songs, but it concerns the faith. Truth be told, I'd never given it credence.
It's rarely told, and the archives of the orders make no mention of it.
No mention of what?
In our time, there are 6 orders serving the faith. But once, some say, there were 7. In the early years of the faith, when the orders were first formed, and the first aspects chosen, it said there was a 7th order. The orders were formed to serve each of the principal aspects of the faith, and so the brother or sister chosen to lead an order is called the aspect. The 7th order, so it's claimed, was the order of the dark. Its brothers and sisters would delve into the mysteries, seeking knowledge and power to better serve the faith. Traditionally, practice of the dark has been ascribed to the Denier creeds. But if this tale is to be believed, it was once part of our faith. The tale has it that after 100 years a crisis arose. The 7th order began to grow in power, using its knowledge of the dark to seek dominion over the orders, claiming their knowledge brought them closer to the departed, claiming they could hear their voices, interpret their guidance more clearly than the lesser orders. They said it was a privilege that gave them the right to lead, to have ascendancy in the faith. Such a thing could not be tolerated, of course. The faith must have balance between the orders. One cannot be set above the others. So there was war between the faithful, and in time the 7th was destroyed, but not before much blood had been spilled. It is said that so great was the chaos caused by this war, that it brought the fracturing of the realm into the 4 fiefs, not united again until the reign of our great King Janus. Whether any of this is true cannot be told. If true, it would have happened over 600 years ago, and the few books to survive the centuries say nothing of these events. And yet you seem to know the tale well. You know me, brother, Canis smiled faintly. I was always fond of stories. The more fanciful, the better.
You believe it, don't you?
A sudden insight came to Velen then, a realization spawned by the faintness of Canis's smile and the immediacy with which he had told his tale.
You already knew.
You knew that this 7th order was behind this.
I suspect it. There are tales, little more than fables, that claim the 7th order was never truly destroyed. That it survived, thrived in secret, awaiting its time to return and claim the ascendancy it sought so long ago. We will go to Master Solace and the Aspect. They must hear of this.
They already have, brother. I told them all I suspected as soon as I returned to the Order.
I formed the impression I was telling them nothing they didn't already know. Vaynin remembered Master Solace's reaction to Sister Henna's words, and Aspect Alera's refusal to discuss it.
They know, he realized. They all know. A secret kept by the Aspects for centuries. Once there were seven. And the seventh waits. It plots. They know.
His limbs began to ache with a sudden chill, although it was a bright, sunlit day.
Thank you for sharing your knowledge with me, brother, he said, crossing his arms and hugging himself for warmth.
I always will, Vaylin, Kainis replied. You know there are no secrets between us. The test of the horse came 2 months later, a mile-long course through woods and rough country followed by three arrows loosed from the saddle into the center of three targets. Surprising no one, Norta excelled in the test, setting a new record in the process. The others all fared well, even Barkus, whose riding was scarcely better than Valen's. He struggled from the start. Spit was his usual fractious self, and would only stir to a gallop after a tirade of heartfelt threats. They labored over the course in the slowest time of the day, and Valen's archery from the saddle was barely adequate. But at least he had passed. For once, no other brothers failed the test, and the evening meal became a raucous celebration, complete with smuggled beer and much throwing of food. They were punished the next morning with a freezing swim in the river and five laps of the practice field, at full pelt stark naked. No one thought it hadn't been worth it. Over the next few weeks, there were more tales of riots and discord beyond the walls. Deniers, real or suspected, were being set upon by angry mobs. Hundreds had died, and the Realm Guard were hard-pressed to keep order. Eventually, as summer slipped into autumn, the realm calmed. Contrary to the expectations of many, there were no more assassinations, no hidden army of Cumbrellians beneath the streets. In fact, the heretical fief was calmer than it had been for over a decade. The summer of fire, as it became known, faded into memory, leaving only corpses, grief, and ash in its wake. The two prospective aspects were led into the chamber, a woman in her early 30s, and a sharp-faced man Valen had seen before. The woman was introduced as Mistress Lisa Ilnian of the Second Order, a plain and serene figure in a dun-colored robe who met the combined gaze of the chamber's occupants with calm acceptance. The black-robed Tendrisal Thorn of the Fourth Order was a contrast, staring back at his audience with a fierceness that could almost be defiance. The odd cheerfulness Valen had seen in him 3 years ago had disappeared, but the fanaticism remained. He scanned the assembly with a narrow gaze, pausing when he saw Valen to offer a small nod. Together with Kainis, he had been chosen to accompany Aspect Arlin to the proceedings, ostensibly as guards. The Order House being short on confirmed brothers, as continuing discord in the realm had called most of them away. But Valen suspected the Aspect also wanted them to learn something of how the different orders governed the faith. The conclave convened in the debating hall of the House of the Third Order, a cavernous chamber of vaulted ceilings and long benches. In addition to the Aspects, many of the senior masters of each order were also present, and allowed a voice in the discussion. Kainis and Valen, however, had been left with no illusions as to the value of their own opinions. I never dreamt I would be allowed to come here, brother, Kainis enthused in a whisper, almost shaking with excitement as they took their seats behind Aspect Arlin. Present at the choosing of two new aspects. A privilege indeed. Valen noted he had brought along a good supply of parchment and a stub of charcoal. Started the tale of Brother Kainis already? Actually, I was going to call it the Book of Five Brothers. It's six, counting Frentis. Oh. He'll get a page or two, don't worry. Aspect Scylla Colvis of the First Order was present along with 20 or so of his white-robed masters. They were all men in their 60s or older, their deeply lined faces apparently lost in contemplation, either that or they were asleep. Aspect Alera was accompanied by only three brothers and two sisters, Valen's heart sinking when he saw that Sharon was not amongst them. Aspect Dendris Hendril's brush with death had clearly left its mark. His skin now a pallid grey, contrasting with its previous porcine pinkness. His eyes sunken into the fleshy mass of his face, like two stones pushed into soft dough. He had brought more masters than the other aspects, over 30, mostly men sharing a singular characteristic, in that they seemed to be smelling the same foul odor. There was only the barest flicker of recognition when he caught sight of Canis, and no offer of greeting to the young man who had saved his life. If anything, Valen sensed the resentment in the aspect's demeanor. It must have hurt almost as much as the poison, he surmised, to be saved by one of us.
These two come before us for recognition, Aspect Scylla told the assembled representatives of the orders. The faith requires we meet to consider the merits of their appointment. We will hear questions now.
Aspect Dendrish was the first to raise his hand, addressing his question to Lisa Ilnian.
The lamented aspect you wish to replace, he began before pausing to cough loudly into a lace handkerchief, served as aspect of the Second Order for over 20 years. Do you think you can offer the same level of experience?
The woman responded without pause, the words flowing easily from her lips in precise, even tones. An aspect does not require experience. An aspect is a brother or sister who best embodies the values of his or her order.
And you presume to judge yourself the embodiment of your order's values? The aspect demanded, reddening a little, although Valen sensed his anger was somewhat forced.
I presume to judge myself in all things, Mistress Lisa Ilnian replied. The faith teaches us to be our own judge, for who knows one's heart better than oneself? Mistress Lisa, Aspect Alera said before Hendral could respond, have you journeyed far in this realm?
I have visited all four fiefs,
and I spent a year on mission to the northern reaches, trying to bring the faith to the horse tribes of the Great Plains. A noble endeavor. Did you have any success? Sadly, the horse folk tend to shun outsiders and cling to their delusions. If I am blessed by ascension to Aspect, it is my hope to send more missions north. The faith is a blessing that must be shared beyond our borders.
Such concern for the outside world, Aspect Scylla said, would seem to contradict the values of your order. Ever has it been the bastion of contemplation and meditation, sheltered from the many storms of our land. Would such work not suffer if you were to concern yourself more with the harshness of the physical world?
In order to contemplate, one must have something to contemplate. A life without experience provides no chance of contemplation. Those who have not lived cannot meditate on the mysteries of life.
Valen was impressed by the woman's logic, but could sense the agitation of the assembled masters, a subdued rumble of conversation filling the benches. Next to him, Canis was busy scribbling. Aspect Arlin raised a hand, and the murmuring of the crowd stopped immediately.
Mistress Lisa, why do you think your aspect was murdered?
The mistress bowed her head for a moment, a momentary sadness passing over her face. There are those who wish to harm our faith, she said, raising her head to meet Aspect Arlin's eye, her measured tone faltering slightly. Who they are, or why they would do this, is something I cannot imagine.
Next to her, Brother Tendris Alphorn spoke for the first time. If our sister cannot imagine who would strike against us, perhaps I can.
You have not yet been questioned, Aspect Scylla pointed out. Show some respect for this occasion, young man, Aspect Dendrish said, wheezing a little.
Valen noted there were spots of blood on his handkerchief.
I offer no disrespect, Alphorn replied. Only truth, a truth some of us seem afraid to speak.
And what truth is this? Aspect Alera asked.
Alphorn paused to take a deep breath, as if gathering strength. Next to Valen, Kenis's charcoal stub was poised over his parchment in anticipation.
We have been complacent, Alphorna said eventually. We have allowed ourselves to become weak. The Sixth Order once fought only against the enemies of the faith. Now they police the frontiers of this realm at the beck and call of the Crown, and denier sects gather in force without challenge. The Fifth Order once offered healing only to those who were true adherents to the faith, but now they open their arms to all, even the unfaithful. And so they grow strong and confident in the knowledge that they may plot against us, and we will still heal them. My own order once kept records of denier sects and practices going back centuries.
but not more than 3 months ago they were destroyed, to make yet more room for the royal accounts we are now required to keep. I know what I say may anger or shock many in this chamber, but believe me, brothers and sisters, we have tied the faith too closely to the realm and the crown, and that is why we were attacked, because our enemies see our weakness if we do not. The silence was palpable, broken only by the choked rage of Aspect Dendrish, who managed to gasp,
"You come before us spouting this heresy, and still expect to be made Aspect?"
"I come before you to speak the truth, in the hope our faith will return to its true path. As for your approval, I do not require it. I am the choice of my order. My election was unimposed, and no other will come before you. The articles of the faith state you must be consulted before my ascension. That is all. Am I not correct, Aspect Scylla?" The aged Aspect nodded his grey head stiffly, either too shocked or too outraged to speak. "Then we have consulted, and I thank you all for your attention. I pray you will all heed my words. Now I must return to my order, for I have much to do." He bowed and turned to walk briskly from the chamber. The conclave exploded with rage, the assembly rising to their feet, shouting their anger at Alphorn's retreating back, the words "heretic" and "traitor" loudest amongst the cries. Alphorn didn't turn, leaving the chamber without breaking stride or sparing a backward glance. The tumult continued unabated, calls for action arising above the clamour, some masters imploring Aspect Arlin to seize Alphorn and take him to the Blackhold. Aspect Arlin, however, sat in silence throughout it all. Verin noticed that Canis had used up his supply of parchment and was feverishly searching his pockets for more.
"Has this ever happened before?"
he asked him, finding he had to shout to be heard.
"Never,"
Canis replied. Locating a scrap of parchment, he began to write again, quickly covering it in script.
"Not ever in the history of the faith."
Chapter 7. Autumn brought the test of the bow. Once again, all the novice brothers passed. Predictably, Canis, Norta, and Dentos excelled themselves, whilst Barkus and Valin proved only adequate, at least by the standards of the order. They were rewarded with permission to attend the Summertide Fair, delayed for 2 months due to the riots. Both Valin and Norta opted to remain behind. There were rumours that the Hawks continued to nurse their grievance, and it seemed pointless to invite retribution at the scene of their humiliation. Besides, Norta had no wish to revisit an event synonymous with his father's execution. They spent the day hunting in the woods with Scratch, the slave hound's nose quickly leading them to a deer. Norta put an arrow through the animal's neck from 50 paces. Instead of carrying the carcass back to the kitchens, they decided to butcher it on the spot and camp out for the night. It was a pleasant evening in the woods, the leaves of early autumn laying a greenish-bronze blanket on the forest floor, and shafts of sunlight streaming through the thinning branches. "There are worse places to be," Venin observed, cutting a slice from the haunch of venison spitted over the campfire.
"Reminds me of home,"
Norta said, tossing a slice of meat to Scratch. Valin hid his surprise. Since his father's execution, Norta rarely spoke of his life before the order.
"Where is it, your home?"
"In the south. 300 acres of land bordered by the Hebril River. My father's house was set on the shores of Lake Ril. It had been a castle when he was a boy, but he made many changes. We had over 60 rooms and a stable for 40 horses. We'd often go riding in the woods when he wasn't at Varenshold on the king's business."
"Did he tell you what he did for the king?"
"Many times. He wanted me to learn. He said one day I would serve Prince Malsius the same way he served King Janus. It was the duty of our family to be the king's closest advisers." He gave a short, bitter laugh. "Did he ever tell you about the war with the Meldinians?" Norta gave him a sidelong glance. "When your father burned their city, you mean? He only mentioned it once. He said the Meldinians couldn't hate us any more than they already did. Besides, they'd had ample warning of what would happen if they didn't leave our ships and our coast in peace. My father was a very pragmatic man. Burning their city didn't seem to concern him greatly."
"He didn't tell you why he sent you here, did he?"
Norta shook his head. The hour was growing late, and the glow of the fire shone brightly in his eyes, his handsome face somber in shadow. He said I was his son, and it was his wish that I join the Sixth Order. I remember he had argued with my mother the night before, which was strange because they never argued. In fact, they rarely spoke at all. In the morning, she wasn't at breakfast, and I wasn't allowed to say goodbye when the cart came for me. I haven't seen her since. They lapsed into silence, Valen's line of thought leading him to questions he felt were best unasked. I know what you're thinking, Norta said. I wasn't thinking. Yes, you were. And you're right. My father sent me to the Order because you were sent here by your father. I told you they were rivals, but I didn't tell you all of it. My father hated the Battle Lord. Loathed him. For a while it seemed all he could talk about was how his position was constantly undermined by a gutter-born butcher. It irked him greatly that your father was so popular with the people, a thing my father could never achieve. He wasn't one of them. He was highborn, but your father was a commoner, risen to greatness on his own merits. When he sent you here, it was a great symbol of devotion to the faith and the realm, a public sacrifice that could only be matched one way. I'm sorry. Don't apologize. You're as much a victim of your father as I am of mine. It took me years to reckon it, why he'd done it. One day it just popped into my head. He gave me up to better his position at court. He gave a wry, humorless smile. Our dear king, it seems, cared little for his gesture. I am not my father's victim, Valen thought. My mother sent me here to protect me. He left the thought unsaid, suspecting Norta would find it difficult to accept. It's ironic, don't you think? Norta asked after a moment. If we'd never been given to the Order, most likely we'd have become enemies, like our fathers. And our sons would have been enemies, maybe even their sons, and on it would have gone. At least this way it ends before it could begin. You sound almost content to be in the Order. Content? No. Just accepting. This is my life now. Who can say what the future will bring? Scratch yawned, his teeth gleaming in the firelight, then moved to Valen's side, snuggling close before settling down to sleep. Valen patted his flank and lay back on his bedroll, looking for shapes in the vast array of stars above, and waiting for sleep to claim him. I feel I owe you a debt, brother, Norta said. A debt? For my life. Valen realized Norta was trying to thank him, in the only way Norta could thank anyone. Not for the first time he wondered what kind of man Norta would have been had his father not sent him here. A future First Minister. A Sword of the Realm. Battle Lord, even. But he doubted he would have been the kind of man who gave his son away just to better his rival. I don't know what the future will bring, he told his brother eventually. But I suspect you'll have many chances to repay the debt. It was a curious fact of life in the Order that the older they got, the harder their training became. It seemed their skills had to be raised ever higher, honed like a sword blade. And so as autumn became winter, their sword practice doubled, then tripled, until it seemed it was all they did. Master Solis became their only master. The others now distant figures preoccupied with younger charges. The sword became their life. Why was no mystery. Next year would bring the test of the sword, when they would face three condemned men, sword in hand, and triumph or die. Sword practice began after the seventh hour, and continued for the rest of the day with a brief interlude for food, and the relief of a short reacquaintance with the bow or their horses. In the morning, Master Solis would show them a sword scale, flashing through the dance of thrusts, parries, and strokes in the space of a few heartbeats, before commanding them to copy it. Failure to repeat the scale exactly earned a full pelt run around the practice ground. Afternoon saw them swap their swords for wooden replicas and assail each other in contests that left them all with an increasingly spectacular collection of bruises. Valen knew himself to be the best swordsman among them. Dentos was master of the bow, Barkus unarmed combat, Norta the finest rider, and Canis knew the wild like a wolf. But the sword was his. He could never explain the feeling it gave him, the sense that the blade was part of him, an extension of his arm. His closeness to it accentuating his perception in combat, reading an opponent's moves before they were made, parrying blows that would have felled another, finding a way past defenses that should have baffled him. It wasn't long before Master Solis stopped matching him against the others.
"You'll fight me from now on," he told Valin as they faced each other, wooden swords ready.
"An honor, Master," Valin said.
Solis's sword cracked against his wrist, the wooden blade flying from his grasp. Valin tried to step backwards, but Solis was too fast, the shaft of ash thudding into his midriff, forcing the air from his lungs as he collapsed to the ground.
"You should always respect an opponent,"
Solis was telling the others, as Valin fought to contain his rising gorge.
"But not too much."
With winter came Frentis's test of the wild, and they gathered in the courtyard to see him off with a few choice words of advice. "Stay out of caves," said Norta. "Kill and eat everything you can find," Canis told him.
"Don't lose your flint," Dentos advised.
"If there's a storm," Valin said, "stay in your shelter and don't listen to the wind."
Only Barkus had nothing to say. Finding Genesis's body during his own test was still a raw memory, and he confined his farewell to a soft pat on Frentis's shoulder.
"Looking forward to it, I am," Frentis told them brightly, hefting his pack. 5 days outside the walls, no practice, no canings. Can't wait."
5 days of cold and hunger, Norta reminded him. Frentis shrugged.
"Been hungry before. Cold too. Reckon I'll get used to it again quick enough."
Valin was struck by how strong Frentis had become in the 2 years since his joining. He was now almost as tall as Canis, and his shoulders seemed to grow broader by the day. Added to the change in his body was a change in his character. The whine that colored his speech as a boy had almost disappeared, and he approached every challenge with a blind confidence in his own abilities. It was no surprise that he had emerged as leader of his group, although his reaction to criticism was often instant anger and occasional violence. They watched him climb into the cart with the other boys. Master Huttrell snapped the reins and steered the cart through the gate, Frentis waving with a broad grin on his face.
"He'll make it," Canis assured Valin.
"Too right he will," Dentos said. "He's the type that comes back fatter than when he went out."
The days passed slowly as they practiced and nursed their bruises, Valin's concern for Frentis growing with every dawn. 4 days after the boy's departure, it had begun to dominate his thoughts, dulling his sword skills and leaving him with livid bruises he barely noticed. He couldn't shake the nagging knowledge that something was wrong. It was a familiar feeling by now, a shadow on his thoughts he had grown to trust. But stronger now, nagging, persistent, like a tune he couldn't quite remember. When the 5th day passed, he found himself hovering near the gates, clutching his cloak about him as he searched the gathering dark for signs of the cart bringing Frentis back to the safety of the Order House.
"What are we doing here?" Norta asked,
his face for once made ugly by the pinching chill of a winter's night. The others were back in their tower room. Today's practice had been hard, harder even than they were used to, and they had cuts to tend before the evening meal.
"I'm waiting for Frentis," Valin replied.
"Go inside if you're cold."
"Didn't say I was cold,"
Norta muttered, but stayed put. Finally, as the clear winter sky darkened to reveal its stars, the cart came into view, Master Huttrell guiding it towards the gate, bearing 4 charges, 3 less than had left with him 5 days before. Valin knew, even before the dray's shoes clattered on the courtyard cobbles, that Frentis was not among them.
"Where is he?"
he demanded of Master Huttrell.